Well, I'll say it differently because I can't remember what I said. but so it won't be word for word. So we've begun today by looking at, if you like, the journey, the visible journey of the sun from rising in the eastern horizon to manifesting and bringing all the forms of life into existence. Now, what we're going to look at this afternoon is the other side of that journey, the journey that happens from the descent of the sun into the west. Into the western mountains, underneath the earth, the places where it then has to travel through in order to be made new, in order to recreate the world. Now, this is the sort of training, this is the substance of these training documents that are called the Books of the Netherworld. And this, because the Egyptian priests and priestesses were trained to work with these deep images. So as to, because what they had to do, and what we have to do when you do this work, is you have to unmake your sense of yourself and your sense of your world. And it's not different from anything else we do. It's just a bit more focused, a particular focused way of doing it. But the training of the Egyptian initiates was to find a way to kind of engage with the underpinnings of their own nature, the sense of self, the sense of world, so that they could, in a sense, deeply align themselves with the source of creation, with the hidden God that is the true image of the human being. So in order for us to fully align with that aspect of ourselves and to enable that to emerge, there's a lot of stuff that needs sorting out, you know, sort of stuff of therapy, the stuff of life, the kind of, and in a way, what the journey into the Amduat, the journey into the underworld is all about. It's about the descent into darkness, the descent into struggle, and then the ascent into light. Because the 12 hours of the night, basically the Egyptian thought of the day having 12 hours and the night having 12 hours, and partly because of where they are geographically, you don't get a huge variation in, you don't get the sort of variation in length of days that we do in this part of the world. So they, because of their need for symmetry anyway, they said the day's got 12 hours, the night's got 12 hours. So the training that the priests and the priestesses would do to learn to work with the deep images is to make a journey through the 12 hours of the night, which means initially a journey for the first 6 hours, a descent, if you like, into deeper and deeper places, until in the seventh hour of the night you're in the darkest, deepest place. And then in the second half of that journey you start to rise up towards the eastern horizon. So it's a descent followed by an ascent. And the main book I'm going to focus on today, really, there are a lot of them, but the really important one is called the Egyptian Book of Gates. Through the bizarreness of colonialism, if you go to the Sir John Soane Museum in London, you'll find an alabaster sarcophagus of the sarcophagus of Seti I. Unusual, because sarcophagi are normally made of granite, but this is made out of pure alabaster. And in beautiful blue hieroglyphics and images, you have the entire Book of Gates. And the tomb of Seti I, which is one of the great tombs in the Valley of the Kings, and it's it shows the whole journey of the Book of Gates into the depths. Most of the when we think of the Valley of the Kings in Egypt, most of the because originally the pharaohs used to be buried in pyramids of various kinds, not just Cheops, but in the New Kingdom we find this new approach to life and death. So this is when the pharaohs start to be buried in tombs in the Valley of the Kings, because the tombs are depicting this descent into the earth, which takes you eventually into the stars. Now, if you ever have a chance to go into the Valley of the Kings, into some of the great tombs, it's an amazing experience, because you have these very highly coloured images that take you deeper and deeper into the earth, and eventually you come to the chamber of the sarcophagus, and it's always filled with stars. So this kind of sense of going deep, this paradox of going deep into the earth, which brings you right into the universe of stars, and becoming one of the, and the journey, if you like, of the initiate is to go deep into the earth, to experience life and death and transformation, and to be a generative source, to become a star. So one of the kind of, so be, to become one of the beings in the universe that can generate new life. So this is the sort of the whole journey, this underworld journey really, brings you into the field of stars, where you rise as the sun, creating your own world. I mean, that's the sort of, that's the kind of overarching image of it. And so...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go on. No, go on. Ask the question. Ask the question.
I've just got something to worry about. My mind is something a bit peculiar. If we've taken things from those chambers, taken the pharaoh, taken the objects, we've taken things out from that space.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, what damage have we done to that space?
Has it
lost its...
Well, actually, no, it doesn't really. I mean, that's the interesting thing somewhere. That the they're very powerful spaces, even so without any of the... You know, obviously, we wouldn't be able to go into them at all if they hadn't been excavated and things, because these were sealed, private kind of spaces. But they're, you know, just as the experience of having gone into them quite a few times, they're very, very powerful. You have these, you know, you're held by these extraordinary living images and sort of, and I had a great experience back in the autumn of in Seti's tomb, in fact, because I was with some guys who really, they're lovely guys who didn't really know much about Egyptology. And they were travelling with us and didn't know what, so we were, and there were only about four of us, I think, in Seti's tomb, me and Ali and these two guys, and they were a bit at sea, and I, just to help them out a bit, I started to describe for them what they were looking at. So and it actually turned out to be very powerful, because actually what happened is I started to describe to them in the way that I will describe to you the kind of living images and the sort of and actually the energy was extraordinary. Suddenly this whole thing came to life, and it was sort of, and I mean, I suppose I wasn't quite conscious of what I was doing. I was just helping out these guys and just saying, well, if you imagine this, imagine, because the on the walls of the tomb, you can't make a lot of sense of it, because it's all flat. There's no perspective in Egyptian art. So you would need to know that something actually isn't flat. It's actually a doorway. It looks like that. So I was just describing to them, look, imagine this. Imagine you're standing in front of this doorway. Imagine there's this great serpent here. Imagine there are these figures on either side of you. And of course, what I was doing is a meditative experience. I didn't realize I was doing it as a meditative experience. I was just describing it. But it was incredibly responsive. So the whole thing turned into quite a, you know, there was a full meditation, because we were just visiting. But it was a very responsive space, really. And it kind of led me, in fact, in my own work, led me into quite a lot of understanding of what the Book of Gates was about. And it was just one of those serendipitous things that by describing something, I find myself... participating in that mystery, I suppose, really, and it's, you know, partly that has led me to do a lot of work on this over the last 6 months.
Was that part back to the Celtic thing? Was it Merlin about the seventh thing being articulating?
Yeah.
Speaking the story.
Well, that's right. And as you do that, you create. As you speak, so you create. Yeah. You know, and in a way, that's kind of, and in a space that I imagine was attuned to those particular images and particular ideas, then of course that space is very, very responsive.
Especially if the images were living images.
Well, exactly. And so these are...
And still?
Yes, they would definitely carry that energy still, and they still do. And in a way, that's why they remain useful today. They're not just historical curiosity. Mm-hmm. So what I've been doing, I suppose, over the last 6 months, is experimenting with this book and looking into it, and discovering that it has a lot to teach me about working with the imaginal, working with archetypes, mm-hmm. And in particular, because a lot of the stuff that the Egyptian priests and priestesses are about were creating gods and goddesses, creating images, mm-hmm. living forms, which is what to come back to, you know, what we were talking about yesterday about working with archetypes, the human being has to needs to consciously work with archetypes, constantly humanize them, bring them into the heart. In a way, and what I suppose I discovered is that within these old traditions, there's a lot of understanding of how you do that. Mm-hmm. And again, serendipitously, I then came across two translations of the Book of Gates, which really kind of helped me to do that. So what is described both in the tombs, in the scripts, and on the sarcophagus, is this journey of the sun into the underworld, The Book of Gates in particular is interesting because there are not many god figures in there. There are lots of images. The Book of the Amdu, it's a bit different. It's got lots of god images, but there's something easier about the Book of Gates because it's not as cluttered. But what it is, I'll just describe, I'm not going to describe all the details, it would be far too complicated, but it's a descent into the depths. So you start off with the old sun god, who is setting, who is going into the underworld, who's tired out, who's come to the end of the day. It's almost the end of the day feeling and the need for rest. And we descend with him through various experiences. And in the deepest part of the night, he encounters Osiris, who is the god of the dead, who is green in color, who's like who represents almost the renewing energy of the earth. And he also immerses himself in the waters.
Osiris.
Osiris, Osiris, who is normally depicted as a living mummy. So he Osiris holds the mystery of death and transformation. And the Osiris is the figure whom, when people die, the Egyptians die, they imagine that they would go to Osiris to have their life judged, to see if their life had been in balance. So the sun god's encounter with Osiris is the sun god, in a sense, this great creative power surrendering to the energy, to the energies of judgment, of death and resurrection, and opening himself to new possibilities. And there's kind of a childlike thing of it, that the great creator, in a sense, places himself before Osiris and almost says, have I done okay? Have I done all right? What
their
do I need?
Their hearts
away, that's right. That's right. That's right, that's right. And the heart is weighed against the feather of truth, the feather of Ma'at. Now, in the Book of Gates, you get a really interesting version of that, because it's quite elaborate in the Book of the Dead, but it's a very simple image in the Book of Gates, where you have this image of a living pair of scales, where the human being's body has you've got the head of a human being and the torso of a human being, and then scales that come out as arms. So the human being presents themselves before Osiris as a sort of almost weighing all of me. Here I am. I am the living scales. Do I balance? And opening themselves really to whatever needs to happen to create a new balance. And following that, then the sun god and the human being must immerse themselves in the deep waters and must be made new in the waters. And then we see this journey up to the surface. Where there's a sort of ascent happening then, and they are, in a sense, lifted up little by little through the six remaining hours of the night, and again have to contend with various difficulties and struggles, but are remade into a new form. And what happens is the scarabaeus holds us up at the end and lifts us over the horizon into the new day.
The scarab lifts.
Lifts the new sun up in the way that it. And they're taking this image. Yeah, that's right. And it's lifted up into the new day, and so you're lifted up from the underworld into the place of shining. So the place of coming out of the shrine, where your light then comes into the world, and literally, you know, as a human being, you get up. You get up. You come out of bed. You create your world. You come into your day.
So in what you recited, all those energies were there.
Yeah.
The sort of like the coming to the sixth hour.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it's ascending, the energy coming up.
That's right, up and out. That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, when you set, this is what happens, and there's all kinds of venomous things and difficult things that have to be moved through. And then you come up and you recreate, things arise, people stand up, the world stands up, everything, you know, things manifest. So, what we're going to do is do a little bit of work. I want to try and show you some of the ways in which they work. So I'm going to use one of the key images. Because the book... Book of Gates is just full of images, basically, and hieroglyphs, and right. So it's a sort of all kinds of strange and complex images.
What did you say that's
the Sir John Soane Museum in London.
Don't know that one.
It's one of the small. It's one of the small private museums.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not too far. Sir John Soane, S-O-A-N-E. If you just Google it, it'll come up with the address and everything. S-O-A-N-E. So Belzoni nicked it from the... It's a real shame, actually, because because it's a very beautiful tomb. And, you know, if it had been left there, it's this incredible glowing white sarcophagus, it would have looked amazing. It would have looked really amazing at the end of the tomb. But Belzoni added away and sold it to Sir John Soane, who then stuck it in his museum and kind of had a big party to celebrate having got it. It's one of the, Elgin marbles kind of things. But it does mean actually that if you're in London and you want to go and it's near Kensington,
it's a fantastic museum.
It's a really good museum. No, he's a real collector, Sir John Soane. It's actually, you know, as well as seeing it for this purpose, it was definitely worth a visit. So it's a see, but it does mean extraordinarily. You can go and see the this object that had the complete Book of Gates upon it, you know, and quite extraordinary. Yeah.
I can remember one of the most powerful things was that crossing of the river from the east to the west.
Yes, that's amazing, isn't it? No.
Very powerful sense of moving into a different.
Yeah. No, totally, and then you go into the desert land. You go into the land of the dead, and there's an extraordinary mountains. And when you go into the Valley of the Kings, you're in these dry, desiccated mountains. You're in a world of death. It's very dramatic, isn't it? It is. So it's
sounds a bit like Varanasi, because Varanasi is always one bank, and if you cross to the other side,
yeah,
there's a temple there, but it's dead on the other side. It's just flat and lifeless. And
yeah.
All bodies being cremated into the Ganges as well.
Yeah, I suppose it's different. I suppose the difference, I suppose, from Varanasi is Varanasi does the life and death on one side of the river, really, because it's the. Because it. Is it. The isn't Varanasi on the west?
It's on the north, isn't it?
I wasn't thinking that way at all.
I can't remember, really, to be honest. But
yes, but the Ghats are on the same side.
But the Ghats are on the same side, whereas the difference it was with Valley of the Kings and is that you've got the living one side of the river and you've got the dead the other side of the river, and that's such a powerful kind of thing somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and it's, I mean, obviously people live on both sides of the river these days, but traditionally they, no one would have lived there, but the dead and those who looked after the dead, the people in the service of the mortuary temples or the, you know, the people who tomb builders, they would live there, yeah. So it's a very dramatic thing in lots of ways. So what I want to do is a little exercise in two groups. Because what they did, how these if you like training manuals worked, is they would get you to engage with the little by little, engage with the imagery of each of the hours of the journey. So the idea is you dialogue with these images, you embody these images, and therefore, and those images then evoke from inside you struggles, issues that are your version of that archetypal journey. Yeah? So in a way that the journey, your journey, is guided by these continual kind of encounters with these living images. And so, little by little, as you work with it, you find these images coming to life within you and talking back to you, and teaching you really about new possibilities of yourself and new possibilities of the world, which is kind of what I've been doing really over much of the last year when I've been engaging with this. And what I find is that, you know, there's a huge. So what it's done, I suppose. The question is, why do this at all right at the end but of our course, because it's not like we haven't covered loads of stuff. But I guess why I want to present it to you just before we finish is I'm finding this a really rich seam of new understanding, my understanding of the depth of human, of my own consciousness, and my understanding with images. So I just want to give you a bit of a flavour of that before we finish. We'll come back and do a bit of it on the last weekend as well, I think. But so I'm going to give you this image, which I'll explain in a moment, and then we'll do some work together on it. Thank you. There we go. Right. Now, this image is the image of being in the boat of the sun. So I'm going to explain what the image is, and then we're going to do some work in it. But basically, this whole descent process, because you descend with the sun god, who follows this invisible river. So this is this boat is towed all the way through the 12 hours of the night.
It's towed.
Totally, you know, pulled by beings who help the sun god to move through the night, and it's attacked by beings who want to stop the cosmic order continuing. Right, so it's a struggle through the night and into the day. Now, the figure on the left, which is called Sia, means perception. S-I-A. So you have this figure that represents what is just called perception. This is the being that perceives. The being on the right, who's near the rudder of the boat, is called Heka, which means magic or will. H-E-K-A. In the center is the god Amun with the head of a ram, which represents. So he's got the sun crown upon him. He's standing, holding the staff of authority. Can't quite see it in this, but in his left hand he's holding the ankh, which is the symbol of life. And in front of him is a serpent whom he's talking to. And around his shrine is this strange spiraling serpent. Now, this serpent, who is called Mehen, M-E-H-E-N, is the same symbol as the spiral and the straight. It's the Egyptian version of the spiral and the straight, because it's the idea of spiraling and continually moving forward.
So what's the name of this god?
The serpent is called Mehen, M-E-H-E-N. Now if you look at the boat, and if you look on the left, you see a little eye underneath the serpent, the head of the serpent. Because the boat is also is one of the living beings that helps this to happen. So what we're going to do is an exercise in two groups, where I'm going to ask people to identify with aspects of the image. And you're going to sort of, if you like, take a journey together. So one person will be Siya, perception, standing in the prow of the boat. One person will be the boat itself. One person will be Heka, or magic, or will. And one person will be Amun.
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 Amun. So that's not the sun god, though, is it?
Amun is the sun god.
Oh, they are both the same.
Amun. Amun Ra. It's called Amun Ra. Ra is the normal name given to the sun god, but Amun Ra is the Amun means hidden. Amun Ra is the hidden sun.
So what's the boat called? The serpent of the boat?
The serpent of the boat is called Mehen, M-E-H-E-N. And the serpent just represents, this, what the serpent represents is this is happening in sacred time. So this image, which you find recurring all the way through the book, really shows the conditions that need to be created in order to make this journey. Right? So there has to be a vessel that holds. So there has to be a container for the work. You have to be able to work with both with both the ability to perceive and the ability to intend, to will. It has to happen in sacred time that is both cyclic and timeless. You have to align yourself with Amun, who is the hidden sun in the middle of the shrine. And you have to do a lot of talking to serpents. Right, and the serpents, as I said earlier, they're sometimes helpful, they're sometimes obstructive, they sometimes bring you to the harvest and the good harvest of your life, or sometimes to a ruinous harvest. So there's dialoguing with the snake is something that happens time and time again. So there's a sort of, this image is a kind of visual summary in some ways of the whole process. Is why it keeps on occurring and keeps on occurring. No, the boat doesn't have anything. It's just the boat. It's just Amun's boat.
And the glyphs at the bottom.
Well, they're hieroglyphs and sort of the I mean, I don't know what those mean. I'd have to look them up, but they don't have a particular meaning. Hieroglyphs are not symbols normally. Hieroglyphs are sound symbols. So they spell words, so they're not symbolic. They're not symbolic in the way this image is symbolic. They're just their way of writing. Right, so what I'd like you to do, if you will, is just to get into two groups. And I'm just going to talk you through a process. And what you're going to do is you're each going to work with one of these aspects, and then you're going to switch round. So by the time we finish the exercise, you'll have worked with all four of these images.
Okay.
So if you need the loo...
Just to get familiar with the images, is that what the object of...
It's to get familiar with the images, but this is the way that they trained people, right? This is the method of training. You engage with the images, you embody the images,
yeah.
And you learn from them. So this is the way they use this training manual.
Okay.
Well, I think I've got one bit like this. I'm going to go next weekend. Well, that's very smart. Well, she's got this like.
It's not really purple, but I like it very strong.
It's very complicated. I like a good scarf.
Sorry, I've lost my pen. Oh, there it is.
Okay, so get together in your groups, and then we'll. I'm going to talk you through the exercise. Don't worry about the names.